Blog Talk Radio.
You follow that streaming URL at the bottom of the screen. Come on in with your webcam and your mic and be a part of the conversation. We certainly appreciate it. It's our time to follow Blog Talk Radio. Eshu is the respected elder who flogs, confronts, and uncovers fools. That one versed in mysteries uses truth to own you. He causes scatter to feed poverty, O Batala shakes rascals to have sacrifice. The owner of warnings is the one who is Eshu. Avoru, Avoye, Avoshise, Ashe. May our Ebo reach a room. May our Ebo be accepted. May our Ebo allow what we desire to come to pass. And so we say, Ashe. Divine, all blessed greetings and salutations. You are now sitting again live with the Divine Prince, Pan-African spiritualist, practitioner, author, and advisor, Elagun Oloye Hudu Obeya Bokur, sharing with you in all things spiritual, mystical, metaphysical, cosmic, evolutionary, revolutionary, healing, and holistic from a Pan-African hoodoo world spiritualist perspective, understanding that all is truly and indeed a blessing. If you can just see beyond the veil, for it's all just an illusion and a test and one of the greatest divine mysteries of this life cycle. This is indeed my constant prayer, my mantra, affirmation, my reverberation, reiteration, and it is my ever-living reality. All as a blessing is crucial to the very foundation of my inner standing, my being, my walk, my work, my demonstration along this divine, all-blessed life path and journey. All as a blessing is indeed how I begin and end every endeavor, understanding that I and I alone create and co-create my divine destiny, and I alone create and co-create my divine, all-blessed reality. And so it is. Ashe. And today we're going to talk about realities. We're going to talk about spirit. We're going to talk about the spirit realm. And we're going to explain some things that might need some investigation, that might need some answers. And so we invite the community to call in using our phone line at area code 845-277-9143. 845-277-9143. When you're ready with your question, comment, or request, do press the number one on your telephone keypad, and I'll be more than happy to bring you into the conversation. I'd also like to reintroduce to some and introduce to others my beloved blood cousin, Oloye Ifawole Oladeji Ifantade, who has graciously agreed to be a consistent co-host with us here on the show. So I want to allow him to come in and give his greetings and salutations, and then we'll open up our conversation for the day.
I'm not aware yet, yeah, what you said to everyone. I hope everyone is doing well. Hope everybody is having a blessed day today. I wanted to share with you just a little prayer from Oya today, as today is the day of Shango, Oya, Obaluaye. So, spirit of the winds died courageously with her husband. She puts matters into order suddenly. The wind of death, mother of nine, shatters the evil mound of earth. Strong wind demolishes the tree by the family door. Rumor in the clouds, hurls down a stone axe. Courageous woman armed forever with a sword. Spirit of the winds, tornadoes, sets the leaves of the trees in motion. She kills suddenly. She enters suddenly. Ashe.
She sails.
So today we give honor to Oya. We give honor to Kaha BSU, to Shango, and to Baba Oluwaye for their blessings today, that all of us will see all good things in life, that our enemies will be destroyed, and that all Alafi and Rey will be upon each and every one of us today who are here at the sound of his voice and at this teaching today. So blessings to each and every one of you, and I look forward to, where the show leads today. So Alafia.
Alafia, Bawani, certainly I'm humbled and honored by your continued support and love and presence and wisdom that you bring, you know, to the show, to the platform. And I'm grateful. I'm eternally grateful. Of course, I've been looking at DNA more and more, and I'm going to share just a little bit of that as well today, along with the show topic, which I've chosen for today, Spirit and Spiritual Phenomenon Explained. Spirit and Spiritual Phenomenon. And indeed, those are two separate but interlocked things. So in coming up with that show topic, I thought about so many different directions that this show could go on. You know, we could approach it from a scientific, a quantum metaphysical perspective in the understanding of string theory, and we exist in 11-dimensional spaces. And indeed, there is a dimensional space in which anything that we can imagine, that we can create, that we can recreate in our minds absolutely exists. And there are indeed interdimensional spaces that don't mirror our reality in any way possible. I thought also about its spiritual context in which we can look at ATR and indigenous world cultures and traditions and how they have viewed the spirit realm. And they too see it as a interlocking collaboration between nature and humanity and the nature of humanity, and then that which is beyond our immediate comprehension. I think about the tones and vibration of the universe, hertz and megawatts and vibrational, you know, patterns, which allow some of us to transcend dimensional space a little bit easier than others. And sometimes it's conscious, and at other times it's spontaneous. It happens in our dream state. Sometimes it happens in our waking state. But I do accept that our ability to be aware and to be in a place where we can perceive spirit and spiritual phenomenon as it happens requires a great degree, you know, of balance. So there's so many directions that we could take a topic such as this. I want to give Otan, beloved Otan, the opportunity to come in and offer her greetings and salutations for the day, and then we're going to talk more about spirit and spiritual phenomenon and explain some things in detail today. Welcome, Otan.
Aboye, just behind friends, Aboye, everyone watching, greetings, everyone listening. I'm grateful to be here again today. And every day, giving thanks to Over the Mighty for all that I have. And I will say, I'm looking forward to this topic. This is going to be an opportunity, I think, for a lot of understanding, possible connections, maybe a few light bulb moments. I'm really, really feeling that this can be something that dives so deep. So this is going to be a very interesting topic. Also want to give thanks to my Aluo, Prince Baba Adebayo Latona, and Olori Isatoye, Yalote Ekeyike, Oyebola Latona. And I'm ready. Let's dive in.
Now, you know, some of y'all understand I'm a Labor Day Virgo, you know, with that 66-11-33 double number thing going on. So I tend to over-research. I tend to gather more information than often I even have time to bring to the platform, you know, in any given show. I also like to give opportunity, you know, for my co-hosts to speak and to share. And for you all who listen in every day on the Blog Talk Radio platform, those of you who listen in on phone lines at 845-277-9143, and, of course, for those who are actively participating and contributing to the conversation here in the ongoing chat from YouTube, Periscope, StreamYard, EarthCam. And so I got a lot of administrative secretarial work that I be trying to do at the same time, you know, when the show is coming on. So people will come through and drop crazy things in the chat. You know that I see it. And I'm moving on it. I know sometimes I tend to mute myself and forget, but I only forget for about a second. So, you know, y'all don't have to keep saying you're muted. I already know I'm muted in that second. So just give me a moment to unmute myself when I realize I've done that. And we'll just continue with the show. I gathered so much information with this topic that, again, we could look at it from a quantum metaphysical perspective. We could look at it from the perspective of not just African-based traditions, but indigenous world traditions and their view, their understanding, even their interaction with other dimensional spaces. When we look at our indigenous American ancestors, you know, they describe the dream state often, and they describe it as something that could be consciously accessed or obtained, but there is, again, a degree of spontaneity in some cases to the dream state or the vision or our awareness that we're actually crossing in and out of intra-dimensional space. And that's why I said I could do a whole show on just the quantum metaphysical, and I'm going to try not to digress in that way. We can talk about string theory and 11 dimensions, you know, briefly, but I might cover that, you know, again in another show. But from a HER perspective, traditional African-based religious system, though a majority of West Africans have now adopted Abrahamic religions such as Islam or Christianity, there are still pockets of people who adhere to their indigenous spirituality, and particularly that as it relates to the ancestors. Now, even among those who've embraced imported religions, vestiges of their traditional belief systems remain manifestly visible in the masked dances, in the festivals and celebrations that continue to animate the cultures of West Africa. And, you know, I take pride in saying New Orleans, you know, in particular, has an intimate relationship with the masked dances and the festivals and celebrations that continue to celebrate the Fon and the Ewe and the Akan and the Ga and the Yoruba and the Hausa and many other West African traditions that provided a footprint, you know, on our city, our culture, and our tradition. I also take pride in saying that a great deal of what we say is American had its roots in Louisiana, Mississippi Delta culture, tradition, food, music, musical use of instruments, cultural nuances, wording, languages, and even some of our food crops that have become staples have their origins in Louisiana and the Africans that work the soil and at the same time work the marketplace and work culture here in the Mississippi Delta region. West African religions have traditionally permeated every aspect of the practitioners' daily lives. Even mundane activities such as farming, trading, smithing, or even simply the act of speaking were imbued with spiritual significance and earthly consequences, both good and bad, so integrated with spirituality to every gesture of life that many West African converts to the new religions could never totally relinquish the elements of their traditional faith and were accused throughout history of idolatry or practicing bastardized forms of Islam or Christianity. And I often say, and I love to say, that there would be no church in America today. Christianity would not have survived in the quote-unquote New World, you know, that is now known as America, without Black spirituality, without African culture and tradition, without the rhythm, the beat, the harmony, the smell, the food, the feeling, the energy associated with our cultures and indeed our traditions. And when we look at sort of the map of religion and spirituality really across the world, but particularly here in America, we see that consistent footprint if you know what to look for, if you know what to listen for, if you know what to smell for, if you can feel, I like to say feel from your bosom, sisters, feel from your heart, my brothers, you can feel just for a moment, if not cross just for a moment, into intra-dimensional space. That's scientific, but we could say into the spirit realm. So we know that just a rhythm, just a memory, sometimes being still and being quiet, you know, how we rock a child to sleep. There's a harmony in a vibrational pattern that we fall into that feels familiar, that feels comfortable, and allows us space to be still enough to experience spiritual dimensional transition. Now, when we think about spirit, now there are dimensions of spirit that exist in the spirit realm. And so those would be things that are indeed influenced by Orisha, by Loa, by dead people, by ancestors, and in some occasions by extraterrestrials or other interdimensional beings, sometimes ourselves. Again, within the realm of this 11-dimensional string theory, there's a reality that mirrors my best interest, that's very real, it just exists in another dimensional space. There's a reality where my fear exists, where my anxiety exists, and those things that I might harbor in my shadow work exist, and they are real within that dimensional space. And sometimes people who experience anxiety, who experience what they consider excessive fear, people who overtly worry, you know, a lot, are sometimes pulling in information from that dimensional space that in a particular moment of transitioning time and space, it feels real to you. People who have experienced an anxiety attack, in that moment, that experience is very real for them. All the fear, all the anxiety, your heart rate, your breath escalates, you know, and in that moment, many of us have experienced a dream where you may not even remember what the dream was, but you jump out of bed suddenly or you wake up suddenly, you know, and you sweating, and sometimes it's the falling dream, you know, where you felt like you were falling, you know, in the dream. But those are moments where we all cross in and out of inter and intra-dimensional space. And in the realm of spirituality and religion, we might call that the spirit realm. So I want to open up this topic. You know, I don't want to hear you say I'm more eloquent about this topic. Because I've talked to too many people in the course of my religious and spiritual life, you know, even my performance life, who had spirit interaction or even spiritual phenomena. And I probably need to clarify the two, because sometimes there are spiritual phenomena that take place. For instance, I've seen heaven, I've seen hell, I've seen the earth from outer space looking towards the globe. I've had an alien or an extraterrestrial interaction. And I'm going to start with that one. Back in my early 20s, I was deeply in the quartz crystal and mineral and stone. I had just digested transcendental meditation. Now, if you Google that, you're going to find a whole lot of teachers and practitioners offering you classes and workshops. That's not what it is. There's a book that was written back in the early 70s, and it's called Transcendental Meditation. And you can still find it once you weed through all the advertisements. Transcendental Meditation talks about how to breathe, how to access transcendental meditation. I can remember that it was frightful at the time to church people and evangelicals. They thought it was a gateway to demonic possession, and you were opening yourself up. Even in recent times, as recently as the last 2 or 3 years, there have been controversies about even teaching yoga at school, and you have these overtly religious folks that say, oh, you're opening up our children now to these doorways and these gateways and et cetera. And to some degree, there's truth in that. Because you are opening up doorways. You are opening up gateways. Gateways that are inherent in who we are as humanity. Inherent in who we are as both animal nature and a product of the earth itself, but also something that might be extraterrestrial. And that's just a word for something that come from heaven, something that come from up here. And so when we look at the stories of Irumole, which my cousin Oloye is better at, the Imole, the Orisha, you know, and even to some degree the ancestors, we might just be saying a different exchange of wording as opposed to saying intra-dimensional space. So we all have had these interactions. We all have had these experiences. Sometimes we cannot explain them. Sometimes we cannot put, you know, words to them. You know, so I get a great deal of requests, you know, from the community, you know, about a dream or experience and what that might mean and what that might suggest. And so sometimes spiritual phenomenon is a manifestation of something spiritual that might be expressing a message, or that indeed might be a footprint of some great energy or tragedy or event that occurred. So then we start talking about ghosts and spirits, and that's a dimensional space unto itself, separate from alien intervention or from Loa or Narisha intervention. So with this 11-dimensional string theory notion, you know, we really have the ability, and I say it every day, the possibility and the ability to create and recreate the reality that mirrors our best interest. That reality is already present in another dimensional space. Our goal is to pull that in to the reality in the present moment in time. Sometimes spirit shows up, yes, if there might be a problem or an imbalance. But again, a message that's being conveyed, that there's often a reason, there's often a tone, there's often a vibration that's being expressed. You know, when we have these experiences that I strongly suggest journaling. And sometimes over time, you know, we're better able to sort of put those pieces together. So I want to open the mic, you know, please, to someone else. I've talked for 27 minutes. Okay. And a lot
so,
of...
when we look at nature, we're looking at what I find as three things. Nature is that which is within us, but we're also looking at netter. So some people will call it metta. And metta then is in essence the God within. So metta. We're speaking about all those things and the elements of the Creator. But sometimes we have to look at metta and nature. Wisdom of nature, Ifa. Wisdom of nature. The wisdom of the God or the divinity within ourselves that allow ourselves to manifest and transcend to a higher realm of being. When we're talking about the wisdom of nature, we're talking about then we look at the Orisha, and we look at the Orisha as their own dimension, as their own place. And then our goal is to live the life in alignment with that which the Orisha lived as they transcended to a higher realm of being. So when we have then Orisha to be manifested within us, when we're walking in alignment with this Orisha, we initiate to this Orisha, then we are now trying to elevate that divine consciousness of that Orisha and the manifestations thereof to walk with us so that we now elevate our consciousness into another level, into another realm. So then now we're looking at what are the elements, what are the sacred elements of these Orisha. What does Oshun manifest in us? What does Olokun manifest in us? What does Ogun manifest? What does Obatala, what does he manifest? Shango, Oya, Ajay, any of the Orisha. There's Obaluwak, just any of the Orisha, what do they manifest in us? What is it that Spirit is calling within us that we need to connect with the Orisha to bring that to a different and a higher vibration within ourselves that allows the sacred nature of that Orisha to manifest within our lives? So, nature, the wisdom of nature, the wisdom of the divinity within us that allow us to elevate our conscious. And as such, as well, when we're looking at Orumile and the difference of Orumile with the Orisha, the Orumile, of course, being the emissaries brought down or sent down by Olodumare for the development of creation here. And then, of course, the Orisha, the ones that walk this earth and that are said to have done such great work, embody such great things within them that they were transcended to a higher realm. Some in some other faiths will call it sainthood or whatever the space might be. But what within us? We are a walking divinity. So if we are a walking divinity, then we are a walking essence and manifestation of Olodumare within ourselves, and these Orisha then bring out the embodiment of these aspects to allow us to live a better life. The Orisha want us to live a better life. So when we're doing this work with the Orisha, it is an essence to connect deeper, to elevate, and to bring the blessings from those Orisha, from that energy, out. When we look at Orisha, we're looking at Ori. Ori is the first three letters of Orisha. So therefore, the true nature is that which is divine in our Ori. And our Ori is that vessel that our destiny is manifested in. It is the Orisha that we were born with. It's the Orisha that is most important. So when you are not in alignment with your Ori, then you're not in alignment with anything else. So let's look at nature. At the spirit, you know, even the term of spirit, what does it mean? Vudu means spirit. Yeah. So you have Vudu meaning spirit. You have Ifa meaning the wisdom of nature. They're both saying the same thing in reality. They might go about some things differently, but in the end of the day, as spiritual beings living a human experience, then we are then in all in alignment with our spirit and how we address it, how we manifest it, and how we embody it, how we delve into it, and what is our willingness and our sacrifice to walk in alignment with our highest destiny.
Ashe. And before I go to the phone lines, Otan, did you want to share?
Baba.
Before I go to the phone lines, Otan, did you want to share?
You can go to the phone lines. President, I'm absorbing that.
Excellent. And greetings to everyone in the chat, one and all who come. If I haven't acknowledged you directly, please forgive me. But welcome. We certainly appreciate you. Our phone lines are open at area code 845-277-9143. Do press the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and I will open your mic. Area code 334, I'm opening your mic. Who's calling, and where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Alabama.
And what's the name of
the you, y'all was offering readings today.
No, we don't do readings live on air. You can connect, reach out to any one of us by way of email. We would be more than happy to assist you. But readings are really too personal to do live on air. I've sort of learned that the hard way, you know, over the years. And so I stopped doing readings on air. Sometimes things that you don't want to talk about, sometimes things you're not ready to explore, you know, get opened up live on air, you know, to an international audience. So we just invite you to continue to listen and indeed participate. And if you have questions, you know, or even comments about the show, you know, subject matter, we'll be glad to, you know, offer you the mic. But you are using the Blog Talk Radio platform. So if you go to the show page at blogtalkradio.com/the-divine-print, you'll see a list with all of our emails there. Right underneath spiritual phenomena. Thank you, beloved. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yes. Please forgive me. I've tried that before, and it can be problematic live on air. I know that's a bit of an entertainment factor for some people today, you know, but I can't do it. I'm also understanding the dynamics of divination in voodoo and in Ifa. Lukumi, Santeria, it's just too long and in-depth of a process to try to do it live on air and run a show and respond to my chat, you know, and navigate between boards. So I just don't do that anymore. But I'm grateful for your listenership and your participation. I also want to talk about, if you will, the manifestation of spirit and spiritual phenomenon, even through objects. The traditional belief systems, spirituality, and faith of West African people has been described in more or less disparaging terms over the course of history, broad terms that fail to reflect the complexity and depths of these beliefs. Paganism and animism, ancestral worship, idolatry, fetishism, heathenism, etc. Only by giving a belief system a proper name can a comprehensive, complex theology and cosmology emerge, along with a more nuanced and thorough comprehension. Religions are generally named after their founders, their gurus, their legendary figures, who taught the core ideology. There would be no Christianity without the Jesus Christ, no Mohammedanism or Islam without Muhammad, no Buddhism without Buddha. And although the traditional religions in West Africa have individuals and supernatural beings who contributed to the richness of their respective belief systems, each lack any identifiable founding figure. What they do each embrace is a main god, the god of gods, known by various appellations and names, which would hypothetically be used as a name for each religion as a whole. The Yoruba religion could conceivably be called Oludemareism, after their supreme god, Oludemare. Similarly, Ewe religion could be named Maluism. The Igbo or the Igbo religion, Chukwuism, and the Mandi religion, Ngewoism. Yet, despite the various names different ethnic groups give to their individual pantheons of gods, and regardless of the wildly divergent myths that accompany them, one region to another in West Africa, there are underlying, strikingly unifying core similarities between all of the traditional ATR-based religious systems and beliefs. A unique belief in a supreme being, distant, omniscient, omnipotent, creator of the world. Secondly, an intermediate divinity or spirits who bridge the gap between God and man. Abasan, Olosi, Orisha, Voodoo, spirits, as we say in Louisiana. Thirdly, ancestral spirits who watch over their descendants. And I often teach that our ancestors are indeed our first line of defense. Our ancestors, they exist in our blood. And then fourthly, magic or other spiritual forces that influence the lives of humans. And that's where it gets tricky, where we start seeing concerns about witchcraft, and if somebody's working roots on me, or someone is blocking or preventing my ability, you know, to find love or to maintain my work environment or to maintain my income. That is indeed where fetishes, dolls, ritual items, implements, recipes, spell work, you know, come into the conversation as it relates to how we acknowledge spirit and the spirit realm. So I want to talk a little bit more about that as well with the little time we have remaining. So remarkably alike in their fundamental structure and essence, could these traditional HCR regional belief systems be grouped, after all, under the all-inclusive term West African religions? We say HCR, traditional African-based religions. This question sparked debate when the singular term was first proposed, along with the inevitable follow-up question, should religion be plural? First question, should we group them inclusively under West African religion? Should we group them inclusively under ATR? And again, the second question, should religion be plural? Perhaps it is appropriate that both Olodumarist and Chukwuist be unified under the singular overarching name West African religion, just as both Catholics and Mormons, despite the divergences, are placed together within the brackets of Christianity, and both Sunnis and Shia within the same system of Islam. There's even a valid argument to be made for moving beyond the term ATR or West African religion to a singular broader term like African religion or Africanism, as proposed by a writer by the name of Lugira, L-U-G-I-R-A. And since the above unifying core elements are present in traditional religions throughout the continent, is it indeed to our benefit to continue to use generalizing terminology to sort of explain these, what I call ethnic cultural traditions? And are we losing something by not acknowledging the Ewe, the Yoruba, the Igbo, when we say ATR?
I think it's a great question, but I think overall, saying ATR encompasses, just like you say karate. Karate encompasses a main word, but inside of that main word holds the houses to any and all systems and methods of karate. But most people just know karate, kung fu, jiu-jitsu, whatever, as the main words. So I think in each one, like Yoruba, Igbo, you're talking about two different cultures within Yoruba that their whole embodiment of spirituality, while they might express, of course, Chukwu as being the god there, Olodumare being the god for Yoruba, the way that they go about it in their path, in their journey, is very different. So I don't know if you can really bring those together, because in Nigeria, I forgot how many ethnic groups there are, but there are plenty of different ethnic groups that look at things and life very, very differently.
200.
Very, very, 200?
200.
So each of those cultures may have some similarities, but of course they're going to have significant differences as well, even up to the language. You can have this over here and they're speaking Igbo, and then over there they're speaking Yoruba and not be able to really understand each other. And then down there, the Hausa, and, you know, down there, it's another language. So I say that we can fit things as a group under ATR because the birthplace, the stemming place is Africa. But other than that, I think each one has their own individuality to a unique point that makes that their own entity to be called whatever name that they're called by, you know. It's hard to lump them because sometimes you don't want to really, if you look at Christianity, you look at Islam, and you look at Ifa, you look at Igbo, you look at these traditions, each one has their own separate identity, their own uniqueness that brings them very much apart. I think that the thing that can link is principles. There are certain principles in each one of the traditions that allow for us to therefore be able to communicate if people are open for communication. So if my principle of life is similar in this realm, let's say in martial arts, we have five different martial arts, karate, kung fu, jiu-jitsu, whatever else. Each one of them have common principles, but exemplified different. So I would say that spirituality has common principles that may be exemplified uniquely in each one of the traditions. Then that would allow that their names and how they go about the embodiment of that would bring about, the different name or the different perspective. But sometimes we have to look deeper and we got to look at what's in a name. When we look at Islam, the state of the name, it is, you know, doing the will of God, right? The will of God. That is the embodiment of Islam. A Muslim is one who is willing to do, one who does the will of God, right? That's a paraphrased definition. But in essence, doing the will of God, submission to the will of God, one who submits themselves to do the will of God. That can encompass many, just by the very definition of the name. But then going into the tradition is where you become different. You got five prayers a day. You have the different viewpoints from maybe Sunni to others, you know, and then the nation has their own viewpoint. So therefore, the very name, though, the name Islam can encompass all. I've heard the minister say many times that, you know, he doesn't want to be labeled per se as just this. He wants to be a child of God. So when you look at Muslim Islam, he often says that Christians can be labeled as Muslims because if they're submitting themselves to do the will of God, then they're following the very definition of what Islam says.
But cousin, then how does that affect spirit and spiritual phenomena? Now, I've had an extensive history with Muslims, and they don't talk about spirit or spiritual phenomena a whole lot, not out loud. We know they're aware of jinn. We know that the Quran speaks of jinn and other disembodied or otherworldly type entities and phenomenon. Like Christians, many of them believe those, you know, events happened in the past, somehow happened in antiquity, you know, but don't necessarily identify them or recognize them today. But they also share, you know, a commonality about how they perceive what's wicked,
yes,
what's evil.
Yes.
Even the conversation of exorcism is still one that's prevalent among Catholics, particularly here in Louisiana. And there are indeed still churches and particular, you know, groupings of priests and practitioners who actively perform exorcism, even today in 2021. You know, I think, again, there's a vibrational pattern that people can fall into that is just religious, and the whole world is just religious and based in the reality of their book, so to speak. But when they experience spiritual phenomenon or even spirit, you know, sometimes we lose language for that. We don't see that being sort of spoken to outside of, say, mediums, psychics, voodoo practitioners, you know, fortune tellers. We don't hear that as much taught, instructed from within the bodies of many of these organized systems. Now, I lived with some Sufis for a time in my teenage year. It was very different with them. They were very much aware about spirits and jinn and how spiritual phenomenon would take place. Sometimes we would go out in public together, and weird things would always happen when we were together, spiritual phenomenon. Then encountering a spirit, you know, someone who might otherwise appear to be intoxicated or, you know, mentally challenged, who would then suddenly break out into a conversation or a particular language, and it would be well organized, well structured, almost like the scene out of Exorcist. Now you're dealing with a spirit. In my younger years as a practitioner, I was asked to clean houses, and particularly houses that might be haunted or have some kind of poltergeist activity or have some kind of demonic activity, which is the main concern that many of the people that sought me out to clean these houses would be looking for. So I did that in Chicago. I did that in Milwaukee. I did that in Los Angeles. And I indeed encounter and still encounter today not just spiritual activity, but also spirit and spirits of many denominations, from what you might categorize as a demon or a jinn, to the disembodied human, to the extraterrestrial footprint, which often shows up as phenomenon, you know, things opening and closing, things moving around. It's sometimes, you know, misinterpreted as ghost activity. And sometimes it's a contact with extraterrestrial activity and transcending dimensional space, time portals, going back and forth into future. And I know I'm not the only one who've had these experiences. I've consciously had these experiences. I've read and studied up and meditated on and really investigated particular areas of spiritual phenomenon, looking for evidence, looking for, you know, an awareness of something beyond just ourselves. And I think sometimes in the pop culture, we often attribute, you know, bad luck, you know, the bad event, the bad entity, you know, at least the phone calls and the emails I'm getting, to something supernatural, if not to something spirit-oriented directly. And I know there's a residue of Islam, Christianity, Catholicism, you know, that sort of keeps certain aspects of that way of thinking alive. But I find that it's not compatible with true understanding of Ori. I find that it's not compatible with, you know, an authentic Labe Tet, you know, series of ceremonies, because Labe Tet is a series of ceremonies. You know, once you are God, once you are the goddess, then we begin to see these experiences from a very different perspective. For me, they didn't decrease or go away. They actually increased, but my awareness of what I was seeing, what I'm experiencing, what I'm looking at, evolved and matured over time. So I understood over time that everything wasn't a demon or a jinn. And just because it wasn't those things doesn't mean that some spiritual phenomenon indeed is taking place. Our ancestors like to push forward spiritual phenomenon. And sometimes it's in dreams. Sometimes it's in memory. What I call time traveling, you know, going back and forth in your memory into the past, deeper into the past, then trying to understand, empathize, you know, with those of the past, whether it be your grandparents, your great-grandparents. Right now, Tulsa, you know, is on the tips of many people's tongues. So not only looking at Tulsa, but looking at the black enclaves, you know, all over America that were under attack. Those are the lynching years, if you all don't understand. Those were the lynching years. So many of us don't want to think about it. Just sit and think about it, what they might have felt. Where were they children? Where were they elderly at the time when maybe their house was burning down or they had to flee? That invokes feelings. That invokes emotion. And indeed, yes, it will even invoke shadow work. But sometimes it'll create spiritual phenomena. And by doing so, your ancestors will begin to want to speak back and want to confirm some of your beliefs, will indeed show up in your dreams, show up in your waking state. Listen, I've had coffee on my ancestral shrine crystallize, just like rock candy, completely crystallized. No mold, no mildew. I'm serious, Otan. Completely crystallized like rock crystal. Oh, I've had liquor do the same thing. Completely crystallized. Now, sometimes it'll evaporate. Sometimes it'll get bubbles. But I've had it crystallized on the shrine. I put produce on the shrine that went bad the next day. But I've also put produce on the shrine that lasted for weeks. I must answer the door. Talk among
yourselves. Got you.
I would say that one thing about with spiritual phenomena and things happening, it first also must be that person's, because everyone reacts to things differently. So it's going to have to first be a person being willing to accept and actually acknowledge what's going on. Before anything else can happen, because if they're getting messages or they have things happening and their ancestors are trying to reach out and they're dodging it, they're not acknowledging it, that in itself can also be a catalyst of causing more things to happen. It's because your attention, someone is seeking your attention and things are going to continue to happen until that acknowledgement is there. So that the work can actually begin, so it can be known what it is that is desired, what work needs to be done, and at what point it needs to begin. So that is something that also must be taken into account, because without acknowledgement of what it is and what's going on first, there can be no willingness to seek it out and have understanding of what's going on or gain understanding of what's happening in that moment. So we always must be aware that, you know, there are things that may be happening, or as Divine said, you know, showing up in your dreams, and that will absolutely happen. And we have to be willing to have that acknowledgement, to accept what is happening, to acknowledge it, so that we can move forward and gain what we need to gain from that contact that's coming.
I think part of it is also sensitivity as well, right? You have to be sensitive in feeling the energetic differences sometimes that manifest with the spiritual things, whether it's something small, like when we go and we do prayers and all of a sudden there's a weather change and we notice it continuously, we know then that spirit is with us, right? Or we go and we've completed doing some work and it begins to rain. In some instances, in some realms, people say that when it starts raining after doing that, that it's fully accepted and God is crying out of joy, right? So there's so many things to be sensitive that we have to not just recognize, but we have to be sensitive as well to the energetic differences that happen around us. It could be even showing up in people, energetically showing up in people when this and this happened, all of a sudden you see this person begin to act. Maybe they're happier, maybe they're sad, maybe they're crying, or it drew something out of that person.
Well, you know,
so the sensitive.
Well, you know, they also used to say if it was raining when the sun was out, the devil was beating his wife. Now, what might that the root of that saying, particularly among our people? Because I've never heard anybody white say that. It's always been our people, you know, who sort of passed that down. I wonder what the root of that saying, you know, was, where that came from.
I don't know. I've really not heard that one. That's a more of a down south one than it was up in New York.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I didn't hear that one in New York.
Yeah, the deep south. I know New Yorkers from Harlem. They're
from the down south.
Yeah, they say that. Yeah. Yoel was also speaking in the chat about you know, Loa and Orisha, you know, showing up in your dreams. For me first, and maybe it's just a Virgo thing that I do. I don't know, but I have to qualify when people approach me with, you know, well, it was a Orisha, it was a Loa, and when I say qualify, people whose only knowledge of Orisha and Loa come out of a book. Or what they see, you know, on the internet, as opposed to someone who's been through ceremony, initiation, had their head crowned, you know, had their head consecrated to a particular, you know, Loa and Orisha. Their intimate relationship with that deity is going to create very specific signs within the dynamic of a dream, as opposed to someone who, you know, assumes you know, a particular deity represents a particular thing, and then they see that in their dream. Now, it doesn't mean that the dream is not relevant, but I have to qualify first the person's relationship to the sign. And then secondly, you know, any deity could be coming through to whomever it will to speak a warning, to offer a gift, to impart, you know, a message. And so, again, I say journal, journal, journal. Please keep a journal, because sometimes it takes more than one dream, more than one vision, more than one experience that you have now documented where we get clarity about what something really means. I also believe in the value of that, you know, we can call it a grimoire if you want to, that magical book of that is your journal is often your first proof. That spirit showed something to you, said something to you, and now you got it written down, you know, in ink or typed down, you know, on a document, and now you have some kind of validation, personal validation about our connection to spirit and spiritual phenomenon. I think God speaks in spiritual phenomenon, and so sometimes God will send us signs, indeed. You know, we ask God to speak to us. We ask God to communicate with us. We ask God to you know, lead us, those of us who believe in God. But, again, our own belief system can prevent our ability from seeing certain aspects of that demonstration. And some of y'all would be fearful, to be quite honest. To be quite honest. You know, if an angel showed up, you know, wings and all, you know, some of you would go into a panic. You know, if Allah or Muhammad manifest, you know, fourth or fifth dimensionally, you know, in front of some of y'all would pass out. You know, and I think our inner fortitude also has a great deal. You know, our inner fortitude, our ability to dream, our ability to imagine. Some of you have lost that. Some of you have been broken down to where you don't imagine anymore. You have no imagination anymore. You can't find your creativity anymore. Some of you would have me to believe you can't find your happiness anymore. And I suggest that's an illusion. Someone has taken your telescope and moved it out of focus. Life has defocused your telescope. And so the prayer and the meditation and the chanting and listening to music and creating a sacred space not only brings about a degree of centering, but then opens up your consciousness. Cousin, do you know I got a request recently in the last week someone wants to have their gifts removed. Now, I haven't responded because I don't know how. And, beloved, if you listen to me right now, I don't know how to respond to that. They claimed they had a gift of tongues. They want it removed. They claim they had baptism. They want that removed. And my question is just, I'm stuck on why.
Yeah.
I'm stuck on why.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had people tell me, well, I know a gift runs in my family. You know, my grandma read or my mama read, but I don't want that. You know, I don't want, you know, can you stop it? Can you take it away? You know, my mother used to say as a child, and maybe she got it from her mother, if you don't use it, you lose it. You know, I've been playing the piano by ear since 2 or 3 years old. You know, but if I don't use it, you know, sometimes I sound a little rusty when I get back on the piano. I miss a few keys, you know, and I got to, it's almost like being an athlete. I'm sure my cousin would say, you know, if you just decide one day you're just going to not follow your diet, you're going to stop going to the gym, you know, you're going to stop, you know, coming to practice, you know, your body is going to change. And so our spirit body does the same thing. And so some of us were never given the tools to interact with spirit, especially in the religious houses, because they don't teach that in the mosque. They don't teach that in the church. They don't teach that in the synagogue, in the quote-unquote religious houses, how to deal with and interact with spirit and spirits with an S on it, and then spiritual phenomena that might be showing up, you know, in our lives.
But, you know, part of it is to, I think part of that is to know the difference between spirit and religion. I think that that there's a very big misnomer, especially in those that I find with church, that think that religion and spirituality is the same, and they lump them together a lot. And from my perspective, spirituality and religion are two extremely different entities. That when I look at spirituality, it is that God-made entity within you. You are that. You are a spirit walking, a walking spirit. But when you talk about religion, you're talking about the fact of a man-made entity and a man-made perspective on what God has said and done and everything like that. So I think that some of what we talk about is the people mixing of what religion and spirituality means and is inside of them. What do you think about that?
I absolutely agree. It's a segue into the question about Yemaya and drowning. You know, and Jennifer doesn't suggest, which I'm glad. I like the way you wrote it. She doesn't suggest whether it's a dream or a vision. She's just asking, can anyone speak on Yemaya and drowning? And the first thing that comes to my mind is Olokun and access to the deeper consciousness.
That, and, you know, we might have, for some of us, it might be that in past generations, we've had others that have had bad encounters with water. I know in some, we have taboo. Some of us have taboo. But even entering in and going swimming, or especially going into the ocean, any of that at the beach.
I know people who won't cross a bridge in a car.
Right. So a lot of that is that, and some of it is divinely natured within us. That we are, when we're born, we automatically have that energy. When we see the water, I don't want to deal with that. So Yemaya is the top, what they say is the top of the water. They say that Olokun, of course, is the deep side of the water. So when we're dealing with the thing of water, we're dealing with the possibility that we've had people or ancestors in our DNA line that, one, could have had bad experience. Two, could have been people that thrown themselves off the boat, was thrown off the boat, whatever the case, or died on the boat, and then was thrown off thereafter, passing through Yamaya, down all the way to Olokun, who preserves before she releases up to Olokun. So I think we just have to look at things, you know, from a very diverse perspective when it comes to that. Because even when you're dealing with Yamaya, you're dealing with Oshun, and you're dealing with Olokun, you might even, if you're initiated to those Orisha, you might have taboo to be eating seafood, because that's part of their divine nature, is the seafood. That's what they eat on. That's what they, you know. So according to your connection with that energy, with that Orisha, it then dictates certain things that might be taboo or might have been through our generations in the past. And now for us, we're reliving some of that energy and that fear, that trepidation, all of those things in regard to dealing with that Orisha. I hope that makes a little bit of sense.
I want to add also to what Baba Aloya was saying is, in addition to that, a lot of the times when any one of us may have a dream per se about something that we perceive as bad, like the falling or the drowning or something, and the first thing and usually in a person's mind would be thoughts of their peril. And it doesn't always mean that in the physical. Just because it perceived that way, because in the human mind, we're like, oh, yeah, it's over. It doesn't have to mean it could be the end of it. It could represent the end of a cycle or the end of a certain situation. It can be any number of things. But please keep in mind that when you have those experiences or when you have those types of dreams, it doesn't have to be in the physical as you see it. It can mean a lot of different things. So it's always good to seek out someone reputable that you could speak to that can help guide you in those areas, so that when you understand what you're experiencing and it doesn't promote the illusion of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something to also keep in mind. So these things are happening for you, not to you, and just know that it's good to speak to someone about that, because it doesn't always have to mean exactly as you see it. It's could be a deeper meaning than what's being presented.
Another good aspect of what Iya Otun just said is also, what is the what does that Orisha kind of represent? What does Yemoya represent? It represents, in one, nurturing. It represents protection, right? She represents motherhood. Look at the aspects of what that Orisha represents and see in those aspects what maybe you need to do or you need to be changing, you need to be looking at in order for, or what you're not doing for yourself in order to change life for the better. So it might be certain things that you are not doing that Orisha is telling you and giving you the message, this needs to end and I need you to start doing these things in order for your health, in order for wealth, in order for children, in order for land, prop, whatever the case might be that you might be praying for or thinking about either consciously or subconsciously. Look at what the Orisha represents and then, you know, go into those things and see how that also enters and manifests in your life.
Yeah, often.
So that is one way also to look at the dream. What does it represent by the realm of that Orisha?
Yes. And often these spiritual experiences come to show us something, teach us something, the spiritual phenomenon to reinforce something. And as my cousin said, it could be a violation of a taboo, particularly for someone who has a relationship with a particular a deity. But when people, you know, sort of randomly have these experiences, they're often speaking a much broader message of change or transformation or even sometimes warnings. Learning to discern voices, you know, I hear more than one voice. And I can discern that of God versus that of a spirit, a Loa, a Risha, versus that of the dead. You know, it's become sort of popularized to say I hear the dead people, you know, but indeed I hear dead people in certain environments. It can be consciously brought about, but then there are the spontaneous moments, walking through the cemetery, walking through the French Quarter, you know, and hearing audible voices, often over time periods, decades earlier. I think it was Craig that also talked about having some kind of premonitions or ideas of even future events. Yeah, I've had an experience where I was taken into the future, several hundred years in the future. I was reborn in what we now consider Africa. America does not exist. Any idea of the third world and destruction, my visions validate that. So there will be a point where America will not be here. It'll be uninhabitable for quite some time. And then I'm reborn in the future in the continent, sort of in an enclave. At this point in the future, they are very familiar with spiritual gifts, psychic phenomenon, and so children are now sort of being separated by vibrational fortitude, by vibrational patterns. So children with particular gifts in this future that I was shown are housed together, are educated together, and then are sent out to other regions of the world to do very specific jobs. So I've seen the future. I've had alien contact. I think that's called of the fifth dimension. There's a list of dimensional contacts that you can have with an extraterrestrial. And so I've been transported. When I became conscious, I was on a ship, an extraterrestrial ship, in a conference room-like setting with an oval, almost egg-like shape table. And I'm at one end, and in the chairs around me, once I came into full consciousness, were indeed something otherworldly, something other than human. And in that moment, I was so jarred by it. I had that experience where you fall back in your body. I was like expelled, like immediately. But there was something about me that they feared. And I suspect that it's something that we all possess, you know, as a people on some level, that they found dangerous or threatening. And in my show of emotion, it could have been just as frightful experience for them as it was for me. And being able to determine, is it a dream? Is it a vision? Is it a premonition? Is it a memory? Comes with a great deal of practice and repeat and keeping a journal, keeping a detailed account, because none of us are computers, you know, save for those geniuses that might be listening among us. None of us are computers and can sort of remember and process all these events and synchronicities and signs and sort of put them together in one, greetings, beloved Arisha, in one moment in time space. So when we look at religion, writing has either been revered or reviled. Keeping track of, keeping books of. We know that there are Islamists burn books burn my berries. But we also know other time periods, you know, in culture where books and keeping a record were revered. The Kemetic people, ancient Egyptians, did a real good job of record keeping and documentation. I don't think anyone can truly say that they have any navigational skills, you know, in the spirit realm without documenting, recording, keeping track of, taking note of patterns. Some of you are really good at keeping note of astronomical patterns and astrology and what's moving around in the sky, you know, but also keep track of what's happening on Earth, you know, and how things are manifesting and responding to. Often the spiritual phenomenon and even the spirit is coming for our own good, particularly in my environment of all it's a blessing. It's never to harm me or create some kind of negative response with me. And even when that is projected at me, I have the skills and the tools to sort of transmute even that energy. It's something that works in my favor. So I don't, you know, it's been decades since I've had anything more frightful to me than that encounter with extraterrestrials. I never had an encounter with a demon, a djinn, a ghost that gave me the same level of fear, you know, and I might be unique. I don't know. I might be unique. Even as a child, you know, we found imagination frightful. You know, we used to like to watch horror movies and scary stuff, particularly stuff that we know that my mother didn't particularly care for. My mama don't like horror movies. My mother's mother didn't like horror movies. But she would, you know, as mamas will do, you know, depending on the level of horror, you might decide to sit down with your kids and monitor, you know, what they're watching. And occasionally we get a movie that was a little bit much. You know, I can remember a time when, you know, every light in the house was off. We're in the basement of the house. You know, we had like a den or family room in the basement. Watching this horror movie, and then doors start opening, closing, you know, in the house. And it happened on more than one occasion. It happened once with, you know, with my mom. It happened another time with my older sister, Teresa, was visiting us. You know, and we are able, with our mind and our imagination, we tend to discredit imagination. I see imagination as a divine gift, a divine skill, a divine tool. And your imagination indeed is your gateway to the spirit realm, your ability to see and perceive something beyond, you know, your reality. So even in the watching of the horror movie, you know, we can work ourselves up, you know, to a particular fear level, you know, and just, the, you know, the broom falling over in the kitchen. Okay, so everybody jumps, you know, they think something's in the house. But I think that we do open up doorways by doing these things. We do open up portals, and some are better at it than others, consciously, and some are spontaneously more fine-tuned to it than others. You don't necessarily want it to happen, but it keeps happening. It keeps following you. Another synchronicity or pattern, many of the most, well, not many, but a great deal of major tragic events have gone on across the country that mirrored my movement. And many of you know, when I was young, I didn't stay anywhere very long. So 6 months, a year, I might be in another state. I might be in another city. But somehow I'm in L.A. with the Rodney King, you know, happening. Somehow I'm in D.C., you know, with Muhammad, you know, and adopted son were shooting and targeting people. I'm in New Orleans, you know, when Hurricane Katrina comes, you know. And so it's easy to, depending on your perception, see these things as a negative. And indeed, there's a relative truth about the negative energy attached, you know, to these events. But I've also come to see the gift, the power, the way energy moves, you know, and has moved in my life and in my experience, you know, in association to what others might say oh, wow, that's a tragic, you know, event. Oh, your story, you know, it's just a profoundly, you know, tragic. And without my story, without those experiences, without those events, I indeed would not be who I am in this moment in time space. I indeed would not be here, you know, to be Divine Prince and Blue Chief and Medicine Man and provide a service in a way that I could assist people who are experiencing spirit movement and spiritual phenomenon, you know, in their lives at this moment. Sometimes we're under pressure, you know, things get bad, you know, health, relationship, career. To some degree, we've all been sort of forced through a funnel of truth in the last year, you know, by way of the pandemic. It's something about pressure, heat and pressure that creates the diamond that is humanity. It's something about us being under intense pressure that can often bring out some of our best skills and abilities, or even shine light to some of our skills and abilities, which we overlook or neglect or don't see in the routine, you know, as routine as some of our lives are, you know, every day. And so it's easy to sort of walk around in life monotone and not in stereo, and now not in digital, and now not in, you know, what is it, 5G, you know, and miss some of the messaging, miss some of the imagery that ancestors are trying to demonstrate for us, God is trying to demonstrate for us, the Loa and the Orisha are trying to demonstrate for us, and some people believe even extraterrestrials are responding more to us now out of urgency, out of desperation, you know, the constant threat that we might blow ourselves up. What's going on in the Middle East and in Israel and among the Palestinians and the Jews and the Christians and the Americans, for that matter, who are deeply involved in that mess. You know, some say that, you know, that power and technology that we now have at our access mirrors times in history like Lemuria, like Muir, like Atlantis. And in all those legends, you know, it is said that the misuse of power, the misuse of energy, the misuse of magic and vibration led to the downfall of those civilizations, according to the authors, according to the historians. So we all live in and experience spirit each and every day. We all live in and experience spiritual phenomenon each and every day. But to what degree your third eye is open, to what degree your Ori is open, to what degree your heart is open, because your shadow work can prevent you from seeing spirit, can prevent you from hearing spirit, you know, and we force, you know, the ancestors to really do cartwheels and acrobatics and set shit on fire and you know, push us over before we hear, you know, and so spirit phenomenon can also be fostered by that inability or ability to hear. And so some of us are real sensitive, and it don't take much for me. I'll often hear it, smell it. I ain't got to see it, you know, but often I will, but it don't take much. And then others, you know, you're a little bit more skeptical. You want God to show up in flesh and blood and then perform miracles. And doesn't that magical book say that? You know, in the last days, they'll ask for miracles and such. And, you know, they'll want some kind of magical demonstration, you know, when we've been living the magical demonstration all along. I mean, if you don't understand this whole mix of spirit and flesh and humanity, and this is magical. You know, according to the numbers, we shouldn't be here. According to the numbers, this planet shouldn't be positioned at the exact angle to get the right amount of sunlight, to not burn it up, to not burn up what water we have, to allow humanity to flourish. And we're foolish enough to think it's an isolated event.
Mm-hmm.
We're foolish enough to think that it's just us. You know, I like to say just us. In place of Jesus, I like to say just us, It's really just us. But we are God. We are stardust. We are having an inter and intra-dimensional reality each and every day. Some of us are just more surrendered to it, humbled to it. I think I was taught Islam meant surrenderance to God, you know, a certain degree of prostration and humility, you know, before God. And that has its place, you know, in spiritual growth. But then there's also a place of just, as we mature, just being now aware, you know, that God or the goddess speaks to whom they will, through what they will. And so too will the spirit realm speak. And it's not always to frighten us, to scare us, you know, to create negative, you know, consultations. You know, many of the sort of tricky language that we like to use around Legba and Eshu, you know. And
one of the things to consider also, there's a lot of the traditions that look at African spirituality with disdain because of their perspective of our what we have as Orisha, what we might have as Loa, and looking at it as idolatry and all of that. Not realizing that even within their own traditions, they still utilize some of the same things in the same way. Even when they go through ritual. So we look at some of their perspective of what they feel about us. I look at it like every whatever Sunday, first Sunday, third Sunday, whatever it is, when they go through the ritual of the sacrificial thing, you know, and they're drinking the blood and they're...
Fifth Sunday.
Okay,
that happened on the fifth Sunday. Yeah, fifth Sunday of the month.
And when they do that, and they're taking of the blood and the body, the flesh, and all of that. What greater way to share Ebro? That's Ebro. It's straight out Ebro. You are honoring the Ebro that Christ made in regard to his people to change and to build and to whatever the case might, your thought process might be behind it. So I think, and even when Christianity and Islam, when we're talking about the whole thing of ancestral veneration, I it is my particular belief, yes, Orisha, communion, that's correct. And so when we're talking about their speaking of those names in the Bible, prophets and all of that, they don't take under the perspective that they're speaking and following ancestral veneration. They're honoring and celebrating the contributions that those people did while walking the face of the earth. When they are going to altar, just that word alone, when they hear altar for traditional African spirituality, if they feel that there should be no altar, yet they go to the altar for prayers. So just in the utilization of their own vernacular, it says, it shows that in essence, they are doing much of the same. Look at how our ancestors changed church. Look at how our ancestors changed the music. They were going from a more European, I want to say symphonic type of music, to the embodiment of the growth and development of the gospel music from the spirituals.
Jazz.
Right? Mm-hmm. So from the spirituals into the gospel music, from the gospel music then that took with W.C. Handy and Thomas Dorsey, and then growing into James Cleveland, from James Cleveland into Andre Crouch and the Hawkins family, up into the Winans and the short brother that everybody knows, Kirk Franklin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So all of the different growth of genres within our community. So I just say that we have to really, really be mindful that when people are looking at what we do in African traditional spirituality as evil, that they have to look at their own mirror. They have to look at their own mirror to see that they are following in much of the same suit.
Exactly, Alicia. She said, when I was a little girl in church down south, they used to sing a song, "The Power is in the Blood." And
mm-hmm.
I remember even here, my mother being in church, they absolutely would sing that song because it would be the power in the blood, your feeling in the blood, anything else they would speak of, you know, how they would change it up and remix it in church. And
mm-hmm.
everything was all about the blood. And
And I wouldn't, often would not participate. I was pulled back, and I'm going to admit something I probably never said before. I think being a minister of music afforded me an opportunity to pull back and not be in the midst of it, because I'm on the piano. I'm on the organ. You know, I'm beating the tambourine. I'm keeping the rhythm. I'm maintaining the music, and we do the same thing in voodoo. And and even if you watch a voodoo ceremony, you've been to a voodoo ceremony, sometimes the drummers are somewhat disconnected from the dancers and the performers.
Sure.
They're maintaining rhythm. Each drummer might have a different rhythm, a different pattern that they first have to focus on. And then you get in that and you sort of lose yourself. And a part of your mind goes. And, you know, I'm the bell person. I'm the voodoo guy. So I like the bells, you know, the various West African, Togo, Benin, the bell. I'm the bell guy. And the bell is often the lead in a voodoo ceremony, particularly for the drummers. The bell has to keep the rhythm. The bell has to be sharp on the point. So my whole body gets into that, you know, like an athlete. You know, and I'm maintaining a rhythm, and my breathing gets even and balanced, you know, and slows a little bit. And then my mind goes. And sometimes it's, you know, out here and in the crowd and with the dancers and even with the drummers. But then other times I'm up above. Sometimes I'm over the trees in Congo Square, where in my mind the Iyami and Oso exist. And sometimes there are other flying things, you know, in that space. Someone asked me in another forum just now about fear of spirit and spiritual phenomenon and then mental health. And what they mean by that is, you know, they're suggesting that some people fear meditation, trance, voodoo possession, out of fear that they might lose their mind, if not lose themselves. And how do we, if we all have had that level of experience, how do we confront that? How do we deal with that? For me, it came out of practice. Early on, there's that fear element. Early on, there's that feeling that, okay, I'm going to die, or I'm, you know, so far out that I might not get back into my body. And through repetition, I overcame that fear. And even if that were to transpire, I don't think I would be fearful, you know, in that moment.
Well, I think that a lot of us, mental health and spirituality, it's a good, that's a good topic for a whole show as well. As we spoke about mental health and worry and all that previously, you know, a lot of that is what your alignment and your attunement is about, you know, because yes, many people are scared of their own spiritual gifts. They don't understand them. They have no reference point for what these gifts represent, what they mean, how to approach them. And then for some, unfortunately, you got spiritual leaders that they don't understand either, to be honest with you. They put on a show like they do, but they don't really have an understanding of how to guide a person into manifesting and growing and evolving in their spiritual gifts. So a lot of people take on this thing that if they allow the spiritual gifts to manifest within them, that there's something wrong with their thinking or something wrong with the way that they're acting, something wrong, but not taken into account of spirit manifesting through them in the way that spirit desires to do. Now, if it elongates and holds on for an extended period of time, then yes, maybe you need to get some things checked out. I mean, to be perfectly honest. But if it's in the confines of worship, whether it's church, whether it's, you know, and what we do in African spirituality, then for some, there's a sensitivity to receive to be possessed. Some a lot easier than others. And there's some Orisha that are not meant to be possessed, while other Orisha, there is a meaning you have to be possessed in order to show that you have the level of connectedness with the Orisha. So, you know, I don't know if I answered the question other than to say that we've got to be okay with feeling uncomfortable with the newness of spiritual gifts and its development within us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think peer pressure plays an unfortunate role in the process. You know, what will my mama say? What will my friends and them say? What will my church members say? One of my earliest memories was being in a Black Baptist spiritualist church. You know, they had shouting, but they didn't have speaking in tongues. Speaking in tongues was considered an evangelical thing. And so we went and visited another church in the community. You know, had what they call a grand time, had a high time, which usually meant the gospel music was good and people shouted and, you know, came out of their wig. That's usually what, you know, that meant in this particular environment. It wasn't like any prophetic, you know, word was coming through. It's not like healing was happening. Just, you know, the shout and then, you know, the ushers coming in and circling you in and fanning you down and, you know, it was a demonstration to me as a kid. So we went and visited this church, this real popular church that was known for, you know, good singing and you know, some outside choirs came and there was some good singing. And this one sister went into the shout and she spoke in tongues. And it was like the air left the room in that moment. And here come the white nurses and the ushers in white, you know, to fan her down, to sit her down. I later on learned that was an attempt to sort of short circuit spirit, to sort of circumvent something that was really natural. Evangelicals have their own definition of that, but that's my definition, you know, of that sort of act of encircling them, quieting them down, as opposed to what we do in voodoo, which is to allow full possession to come through, to identify what the Bible say, identify the spirit, know if it's of God. We do the same thing in voodoo. We identify the spirit, and so we know if it's of God. We know if it's a useful spirit. We know if it's not. And so all spirits are not allowed to possess, as my cousin just said, nor should they be attempted, you know, in possession. But in a free-for-all-like religious setting, which is how I saw that as a kid, anything is coming through. You got people shouting all over the church, you know, with various degrees of commitment to the same ideal, belief. Church doesn't require initiation necessarily, other than the right hand of God and the baptismal process. But there's no real training there about spirit, what that is. As a child, I'm speaking as a child now, you know, people just start shouting at will. People just start babbling and eventually speaking tongues at will. There was like no class for that because I looked for it as a child. I imagine, okay, are they mimicking each other? You know, is there a class that I don't know about where they teach people how to do this? You know, and as I got older and more knowledgeable, I realized, okay, it's a spontaneous event. And yes, there are people who are mimicking. Yes, there are people who are going through the emotions. But even as a child, the hair on my arms would stand up when it was real.
Mm-hmm.
When it was real. And even now as a voodoo practitioner, I don't negate the power of the Holy Spirit to move. You know, we just call it by another word. In our tradition, we just identify by a different spirit.
I agree absolutely, because also having a background in the church, that is pretty much how it was. Also, growing up being in the church that my mother was in, were also speaking to the fear when they said of having certain experiences or certain gifts. I will say this, it can be a scary experience. It can be particularly so for those who did have or did recognize their gifts when they were young, and were unfortunately in an environment where not only were those gifts recognized, but they were perceived incorrectly. As in like working with the church, I will share that I don't like using that sixth sense word, you know, the I see dead people thing. But we would have people transition in our family, and I would usually have a dream. I would see them within a week or two of them transitioning. And as a child, it was very frightening. What's even more so is for that to be misunderstood, because in the church, that was something that was an absolute no-no, because when you transition, that's it. You either go to heaven or you're going to hell. That's what some of them believe, a lot of them. It's either you're going to heaven or you're going to hell. Anything on the in-between is a demon and something trying to get you, and basically that's what it was. It was perceived as that, and then that's the narrative that was pushed. And a lot of the times that can be very detrimental, especially with young people, not having a full understanding, and then having that non-understanding intensified by adding an element or illusion of fear to that by saying, this is not what this is, this is bad, this is what this means, this is something that, you know, something coming to get you. In essence, like putting a non-existent boogeyman in the child's head. So it's something that, you know, it's different areas that everybody would need to work through. I would encourage anyone going through that, like I said, that to have a talk with someone that you can have in that capacity. And if you need to see someone, as I said, absolutely. A lot of the things that people go through that we may see or we may hear about with people and their mental health is actually coming because of spiritual things happening, and they're not understanding. And they're not having the strength and the presence of mind or that connection with that or reach to make sense of it or to make life or gain that understanding so that they can function within those messages and within the capacity in which their gifts are showing up. And sometimes that's hard. So it's a lot of those things. So absolutely, there's nothing wrong with mental health. It's good to have someone to talk to. It's all right to have a therapist, because a lot of the times having that will give that medium, that balance that's needed to maneuver as gifts, because some people have gifts. They notice them when they're young. Some things happen when they're older. And it's good to have therapy. It's good to have that balance so that there is clarity, so that there is calm as these things are realized, as they're uncovering themselves. And I encourage that for anyone, because I've had those issues, and I'm still working through a lot of that stuff today. So it's definitely something that needs to be discussed. Do not be afraid, ashamed, or anything like that. I've been to plenty of prayer meetings as a child, slathered down with grief and prayed over and all of that stuff because of my gifts and the things that I spoke up about. And sometimes that can be extremely traumatic. So please reach out to those that you feel like you can talk to. Get the information. If you need to be connected to a therapist, get that. There is nothing wrong with none of that. If anything, it will enhance your skills and your understanding to be able to function better in your life the way that you need to in your day-to-day. Everybody's situation is different, but I absolutely encourage that.
Some can't afford to do the therapist, but we also have life coaching or spiritual coaching. And so Otun, in her humbleness, sometimes forgets to share now that she has her own life coaching, spiritual coaching ministry. So, you know, for those that might be interested, all three of us have our ministry. And so feel free to reach out. Otun now has her Anchored in Grace life coaching ministry, Armored in Grace, her life coaching, spiritual coaching, and business coaching ministry. So reach out to any of us, you know, for any type of assistance on that. Besides, you know, Divine Prince and myself, of course, we also do advantage of all that we can. You know, we have listeners from all around the world, and we're available, so.
I agree. And by all means, journal, I can't say that enough, journal. Write down your experiences, write down your visions, write down the spiritual phenomenon that takes place, you know, in your reality. It'll
mm-hmm.
make it so much easier for not just yourself to understand it, but any practitioner that you might reach out to, you know, to have something already well documented,
mm-hmm.
you know, well structured, that we can look at and help you to sort of discern and decipher,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's happening, what's being presented, why something is taking place. Cousin, I couldn't get it any bigger.
Okay, no problem.
Then
for those that are interested, that might want to be a part, I'm doing a guided meditation in the energy of the Orisha coming up on Friday morning. And if you guys want to have more information, you can give me a text or a call. The email I put in just pulled up. Feel free to email me or to text me, and I'll give you the information. It's an early morning Friday event. We're going to do it on Zoom. So, you know, you'll have an opportunity to be a part of that if you so desire. And then if we have enough interest, it might be something that I continue on through our temple for those who find that the guided meditation to assist them and to help them and to find peace. And, you know, as well, our temple will be growing with different things coming up as well. So, you know, we invite you to be a part of the guided meditation. It's a little bit different in that we're doing it through an Ifa view and in an Ifa perspective, but I'm looking forward to it and blessing those who will be there to take part. Thank you for the time to share.
Absolutely, no problem. And I know we sometimes pushing Otan out there. Almost like a show mama pushing her little girl out on stage. Sing pretty now, baby. Don't forget to smile while you know. Yeah. But that's how it works, honey, and it's in the blood. It's in the family line, you know. So just get with the program. You know,
uh-huh.
we're all here to do work, ultimately. We're
all
here to work. Yes. And sometimes we, you know, personalize our journey. You know, I'm on my journey. I'm working through my stuff. And we forget the value of working with others, you know, even in our own healing. It's a therapeutic process for me every time I do a divination. You know, I'm connecting on a personal level. And you would want that from a practitioner. I'm connecting
mm-hmm.
on a personal level, an emotional level, an empathic level, an empathetic level, you know, to every request, you know, that comes across the board. And they're not for entertainment. You know, 99.9% of the people, you know, who come to me come for really serious concerns, you know. And that reminds me, you know, I want to acknowledge my prison ministry. I don't acknowledge you all enough, you know, for obvious reasons. I don't want to reveal anything about anybody, tell where anyone is. You know, our imprisoned brothers and sisters sometimes got to go through some maneuvering to have, you know, contact with the outside world. But I'm grateful for you, and I'm here for you. And the families, you know, who are fighting through, you know, with sons and daughters who are incarcerated, you know, caught up in the system, you know, fearing large amounts of time, you know, away from their families, you know, and their children. We don't acknowledge them enough. And so, and Black Lives Matter and commemorating Tulsa, you know, we're also commemorating those family members, those community members, you know, who are caught in the system. You know, in some cases, it can be another form of death. You know, you're absent, out of sight, out of mind sometimes, you know, and it's easy for them to feel isolated, you know, and sort of entrapped in that reality. So I just want to acknowledge you. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for the mothers, the fathers that reach out to me, know that you have my eternal support and that you're not in this battle, you know, alone. And yes, let's commemorate Tulsa and the events of Tulsa, the massacre, the terrorist attack that took place in Tulsa and subsequent communities by further educating ourselves. And not just about this, because it's, you know, in the front of the media today, but those black enclaves all over America, Rosewood, Kirkwood, you know, many of those cities had wood in the name for some reason, you know, but acknowledge those towns, those communities, you know, that didn't survive, you know, or just left the Senate to rebuild and become who we all are today. We must be activists and not just magicians and soothsayers and practitioners. We must be activists. And some of you are activists in nutrition. Some of you are activists in health and wellness. Some of you are activists in legalities, in administrative documents, and how to organize your business. You know, those people exist in our community. I got some powerful people in my community, accountants, people who know how to write grants, people who can help you, you know, self-employed individuals, get your paperwork together. You know, because if you're legitimate, you got to have your paperwork together. You got to pay taxes. You got to have a record, an account, you know, of what you do and how you're doing it. You know, it's real easy and bending to kind of just take cash and stuff it in your pocket and, you know, not necessarily keeping documents or your inventory. But we're in a new day now, you know, and many of us are now self-employed and operating from our computers and from our homes and from our sacred spaces. So let's do the work. Let's reach out to those in our community that can help us to improve on the work. And I'm going to bid you all adieu. We're almost 15 past the hour. I'm grateful, always grateful for you all showing up, especially for my cousins for showing up, because sometimes I don't even know what I'm going to talk about to the last minute, you know, and they still find a way into the conversation, and I'm humbled by that. I try to get it as early as I can, but sometimes it's a struggle, you know, and I'll be begging spirit, you know, what am I supposed to be talking about today, you know, and sometimes it comes after midnight, so forgive me for that. But I'm grateful, and I look forward to connecting with you all again here at High Noon, U.S. Central Standard Time, for more revolutionary hoodoo New Orleans food secrets and recipes. All is truly and indeed a blessing. I think I began to ramble there for a minute at the end.
It's all good.
I forgot what I was even talking about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just knew I had to stop. Yeah.
Okay, if you don't start letting people know about your business.
Okay. All right.
And let me say the other part to it, because I kind of leaked it a little bit, suggested it. And if I'm out of my place, please tell me you out of place, mind your business. But I feel that because I experienced it, it's a little bit of fear. Because indeed it means now I got to let people into my space, into my circle, into my feelings. Because in a way we are letting people into our world, even if it's virtual, you know, even if it's on camera, even, you know, we're still letting them into our space. And for me, early on, I had apprehension about that. And that's what I meant when I say, you know, it's a therapeutic process for me every time I deal with somebody, because you got to deal with you. You can't give what you ain't got. And if you're processing things naturally through your own cipher and then expelling that, projecting that out upon your client, then no matter what they come into you about, it's about you. Even if they don't know it, inside, it's about you. What? How am I standing up in this? How am I dealing with this? What would I do if, you know, these are questions that I ask myself. I am just a little bit older than you, a few days older than you. You know, I've seen it mature. I've seen it grow over the years in terms of how I respond to the end. So I'm not quite as anxious anymore. I'm not quite as frightful. Now, I'm not cocky. I never get to, oh, I got this. I can read anybody. I don't care what they come to me with. You know, I've never gotten to that place. I don't know if I ever will, because I don't think that's real, because it's not us. We are vessels.
Mm-hmm.
We are a tool by which the spirit flows through us when we're in balance. And, of course, that includes diet, getting plenty of rest, getting exercise, taking your spiritual baths. You know, we have to take more baths than other people. We have to. We have to cleanse more than other people because of the energy that we're dealing with. I can take 3 or 4 baths in a day, seriously. Not just you'll get up in the morning and be clean, but I'm dealing with people that's talking about demons and gin and getting 40 years in prison and the mama is in a breakdown and the woman that thinks somebody put magic on her vagina and, you know, just craziness. Yeah. Somebody put witchcraft on her. It's making her labia swell. She desperately wanted to fly in, drive in. This by email now.
Wait a minute. I didn't want to blow your coochie up.
Allow me to consult my elder women. Don't you get on the highway. Don't you come here. That's what I had to tell her. Let me consult the elder women before you make a move. And, of course, between Denise and Nadja, we'll talk to her. She never did.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I never let her come here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of stuff I would have loved to have gotten into. Was it a demon? Was it somebody trying to bring witchcraft to my house? You know, you can't just say, oh, I'm reading everybody. I'm doing cards on everybody. That ain't real.
Mm-hmm.
Real. And if they're operating in it sincerely, you're passing all that energy, Otan, through your body.
That's right.
And so you and I are sensitive. We're similar in that regard. Don't let my articulation and my ability to speak for 2 hours fool you. It's one of the least things I like to do. I'd rather be quiet. I'd rather not have people in my house. I'd rather not go anywhere. And so it's an effort for me to get up, to interact. Okay, let me go out here and be in the community because that's my job. Let me show up to this event because I ain't been in a year, you know. Let me go to this family barbecue at least this time so they can say I showed my face. That's the real me, seriously. That's the real me. So I'm very fine-tuned to your faith because I relate. So, you know, when we kind of push you out there like that, I feel that. So if I'm wrong, just tell me I'm wrong. But, yeah, it's going to be some work. Yeah, you're going to have to keep notes. Yeah, you're going to have to document. Yeah, you're going to have to make extra time now to find some quiet space. You know, you already have to do that when you have children. When they sleep, you know, at 2 something in the morning, but then you want to be asleep, you know, but spirit might wake you up. Spirit might have you up, you know, doing your best.
Oh, that happened.
Yeah, doing your meditation. So, yeah, I get it. I do. And
you're not wrong. I do need that push, and
I ain't scared. Push you right on out. Push you right on out the airplane.
It's drop off and be there. And
Set clear boundaries.
It's crazy because I don't like being in places with large files and all of that. I can talk to anybody, but I just don't.
That's all three of us.
And stuff.
That's all three of us.
We all have that.
There's none of us that like it.
Yeah. What you're seeing is years of acting and performance. Seriously. You're seeing years of me having to be in the front of the church, having to be on the piano, having to be at the mic. You're just seeing years of me acting and performing. Because the real me is much more regret than what you're seeing here. But, and let me offer you this. Set clear boundaries. Be sure you set clear boundaries. One of my boundaries is I rarely answer my phone. Rarely. If my mama gonna call, she gonna text me first and say I'm about to call.
Yes.
But I ignore every other ring unless it's a special ringtone. My mama, one of y'all, I'll answer you all's call. But for the most part, I don't answer calls, especially random unknown calls, because it's almost automatically gonna lead to, well, let me tell my story. Nope, boo, I don't have to, I can't do that right now. Let me schedule you. Well, what does that entail? How much does that cost? Beloved, I don't charge. I ask for a donation. Then I got to explain. And if I did that, every time my phone rang, I would be on the phone all day.
Mm-hmm.
So my voicemail is very clear. Contact me by email. My office skills from my past life stand up in this. I'm well documented. Email addresses. I've got form letters. My greeting letter, what kind of service they want. Every question they've asked me, I got a form response to it already. And when that unique person comes through and asks something out of the ordinary, I tweak my work so that if that ever comes up again, it's already covered. It's already in the document. How much, how to do it, how to
but
do
I definitely got to do that.
Yeah, just you got to set clear boundaries. You know, and then they have to allow me 24 hours, 48 hours, that, you know, because you have children. Set a time frame. You know, I will respond to you within a certain amount of time. Usually I'm going to respond within 8 hours, usually.
Mm-hmm.
But in words, I ask them to give me at least 48 hours to respond.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't
make you look better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you time to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Because once people start contacting you, you know, just like a store, people coming in and out, you know, people coming in and out randomly from a store is one thing. People coming in and out of your virtual office is something else.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires more of you. So you want to be in control of that. People say, oh, well, you're open 24 hours. I am by appointment.
Mm-hmm.
By appointment. And often people have scheduled their appointments days, sometimes weeks, and even months ahead of time. It's overwhelming, beloved. I don't brag about it. I don't talk about it, especially in social media, because too many people would feel some kind of way about it. My phone ring over 300 times a day. A day.
Damn!
A day. And so,
I would say I want to be like you, but not at 300 people a day.
You got to have set boundaries. You got to have rules. Otherwise, it will be overwhelming. And people do feel like, oh, well, it's 3 o'clock. Let me call this phone number. And they call, and it goes straight to the voicemail. And that message is consistent in all of my platforms. By appointment only, make your email address readily accessible, Otan. Make it readily visible, Otan. To remove any question that somebody might have about what you do, how to reach you, how to contact you, and make it consistent on all of your social media platforms. Now, the office part is a job. It's going to feel like a job sometimes, answering all them emails, checking in all your social media. I'm looking at your face now, checking in all your social media platforms, you know, but I send all those people to my email address. You know, I can do four divinations in a day comfortably. An average consultation is going to be about 2 hours with me, an hour and a half, 2 hours. You have to acknowledge your value. I don't do $5 readings. I don't do $20 readings. I don't do $3 readings. My most basic consultation is $150.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at first people said, oh, that's high, until people actually went through that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then people say, oh my God, you're worth so much more than this. And after I overwhelm them with that information and that history and that teaching, because I'm teaching while I'm reading, no one is having a problem with this. But it took years of practice. I went from 60 to 75, and then the requests got bigger, the concerns got bigger, people getting emotional, people crying, people calling in for their mama, getting their mom on the phone, mama's getting their son that's in prison, you know, in on the call. The ancestors were speaking to me. Yeah, you worth much more than what you're asking. So I had to set an amount, just like any other quote-unquote business, and religion is a business. You have to consider your value, your power, the amount of time your computer is up, what amount of time is taken out of your day, all of that is in that decision of 150.
So how long did it take for you to get kind of things kicking and moving where you're getting consistent clients?
In the first 5 years. So I'm talking about 2005, 6, 7, 8, and 9. It was in, those were my building years. Building meaning getting as many social media platforms as I can. That's a job, but it's important if you want to do business. I'm even on TikTok. Making sure your website is up and running and organized, and through your clients, they'll help you tweak that because they're going to say, oh, well, I'm looking for this and it wasn't there. For example, I took all the prices off my website.
Okay.
That became a problem because I don't want a client who's shopping prices. So I'm looking for the cheapest reading. I'm looking for the cheapest connection. You know, I'm not looking for that. I'm really looking for people who are more committed to ATR than just the reading. So I can pull my prices off of my website. And again, make people go send me that email, which is a legal document. You know, you may not know who they are, but you got that IP address attached to that email. And I only use PayPal. And some people argue that Venmo and cash, I don't use none of that. Only PayPal. And that streamlined my ability to take in this higher volume of consultation. So it took me about 5 years to make a splash, in my opinion, make sure my website was up, get all of my, you know, social media going. And at that time, I did a lot of posting. History, I pick an ethnic group a day, some aspect of the spirituality and religion every day, and then I would post that and teach that from Facebook and then radiate that out. Then people started mimicking that. Even my good friend Tony Val started mimicking that. So I pulled back on that and then started doing the Blog Talk Radio. Because you can't mimic my voice, our emotion, our material that's coming directly out of it. And Blog Talk Radio even made my consistent traffic that much more present. People kind of depend on the show.
Okay.
They really do. If you say you're going to do it daily, you got to do it daily. And so I've settled into every other day. That's working. You know, I'm managing to not miss shows, doing, you know. And so they're comfortable now with the every other day, but they require it spiritually in a way that you and Otan might not understand.
Interesting.
If we're not on, I get emails. I get responses. Some of the clients that come to me for readings, well, I've been listening regularly, but you missed a few days. Or, you know, people are listening to this in their workplace. People are broadcasting this in their office, and those people can't call in, aren't chatting. But they're listening to the show. My mama's 78-year-old evangelical Christian. Her friends are listening to this show. Her therapist listens to this show. Okay? Yes, beloved. Yes. So being present, being active in social media, having a clear, consistent website, those are the keys to sort of doing this and making this work. I do well. I pay taxes. I pay a lot of taxes. A lot.
Okay.
I paid over $10,000 in taxes last year, federal taxes. Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
When you understand the internet, the two most, I want to use the right words, two most financially profitable industries on the internet. Number one is porn.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is spirituality and religion.
Really?
Spirituality and religion. And you know that comes in many forms.
Right. Uh-huh.
You know, including the personal coach or, you know, the comedic entertainer that just likes to talk shit, but is throwing in tidbits of wisdom at the same time. You know, it shows up in many forms. But according to the numbers, according to the statistics, porn is number one, spirituality and religion is number two. And it's been that way since I showed up on air, which is right after Hurricane Katrina in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So intellectual property is more valuable than products.
Okay.
That's why I'm not running a Botanica.
Okay.
Running a Botanica to some degree is a headache. Just like any store, you got to keep your products in stock. Or you're getting your product from some third source and then having to send that. You got to go back and forth to the post office. I do that for my clients. I do that for my godchildren. I do that for somebody that I'm working with. So, I got a Botanica on the other side of the wall. I got an apothecary on the other side of the wall. And I bag those things up and take them to FedEx. But for me personally, going back and forth to FedEx every day, I ain't ready to do all that. That's Denise's thing. She's trying to do coffee cups and T-shirts. Okay, girl, I support you, but that's a lot of work. Whereas intellectual property come from here, come from your heart. So know your value, Otan. Don't start low. Don't believe the hype in, you know, our people are struggling. Our people, that's not true. The numbers don't support that. African Americans spend more money than any other ethnic group in America outside our community and on things like hair products and beer and cigarettes and, you know, the
core. Well, I was going to say, people make time, but what they make themselves and have resources available for what they really need. I've worked with people. I've seen people crawl out of work there and go to a concert or people scream broke and got a $700 weave in their head. I've seen it all, and I know when it's designed. I know a lot of the time, unfortunately, with this with poorly.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.